Are you ready for the Low Blows Network? Every Wednesday on the Low Blows Network, the Low Blows team are at hand to break down, analyze, and make fun of all things pro wrestling. Hosted by former pro wrestler Rick Nash.
I think the only reasonable thing we can do now is turn John Cena heel.
Selfie with me, fucking dog.
Banned from Nigeria. I will be talking to the government tomorrow morning.
YouTube star Corporate Keenan.
This elephant has four legs. Joe Russell's four legs. Joseph Stalin, if he had two more legs.
Bonesaw rips off his shirt, yeah? And it says, Chuck your law. Big dirty toy for him.
And the queen of Irish wrestling, Katie Harvey.
I won't want to sign just CM Punk.
I'm so embarrassed. CM Punk.
It's Low Blows. Bravo!
Happy Wrestling Christmas, guys, and it's that time of year where, you know, we've sat through Christmas, we've tolerated it, you know, we've got boozed up, we've eaten our fill of turkey, but that's not the real stuff if you're a real wrestling fan. Like, let's call a spade, like, that's for everyone else, that's for the Hunzos to post about how their boyfriend got them the same rings or jewellery as all their other friends were getting. That's for the lads, like, giving their three-year-old scramblers and crashing them into telephone poles. That's for them. That's what Christmas is for. That's not for us. We're fucking nerds. We're wrestling fans. Wrestling Christmas takes place, of course, everyone knows, on January the 4th for Wrestle Kingdom, and it is back, guys. I cannot wait. This is like, it's weird, and I forget this every year, and I get this new sensation. And I know it's because, look, as has been well documented on Low Blows. Of course, Rick Nash here. If it's your first time listening in, thank you. You're very welcome, and I hope you stick around for future shows. Rick Nash here, hosting the Wrestle Kingdom 14 Explainer Show. It's been well documented for long-term listeners that, like, look, I like my New Japan, okay? I'm into it. But every year, like, I kind of, like, I get excited for Christmas, and, like, I'm vaguely aware that, like, we're promoting the Wrestle Kingdom party, coming back to Buskers and the Ball for the third year running. Let's pack out a Temple Bar pub and shut it down for Japanese wrestling again, lads. It's always class when this happens, and but we do need your support to do so. So please get on it and come down on Sunday the 5th from 2 o'clock in the day, an afternoon double dose of Wrestle Kingdom. We play both shows back to back. So try avoid Twitter for the couple of days, and then come down and just enjoy it fresh with us. It's always amazing crack, and I'll never get over the fact that we pack out a Temple Bar pub for this. It'll never stop being cool. So please, guys, if you enjoy that as well, show your support this Sunday. Look, like I said, it is well documented. I'm a big New Japan guy, but I think it's one of those things that it's like a movie series that you may not have seen, where it's like everyone's saying it's great, and then, like, you finally give in and watch it, and then you're like, oh yeah, this is great. This is why it's great. So yeah, that's what New Japan Wrestling, Pro Wrestling is, and Wrestle Kingdom is. And every year I get excited for Christmas. Like I said, vaguely aware and promoting the Wrestle Kingdom party, but, like, you know, it's hard to focus on anything else as December 20th and 21st and 22nd creeps up. But then as soon as Christmas is over, I realize that my excitement level was only, like, kind of, I don't know, spectatory is the best way I can kind of describe it. It was just kind of like a tribute to excitement, where I'm like, oh, yay, it's Christmas again. And, like, I love Christmas. It is great. But Christmas is Christmas. We do the same things every year for the most part. And like, even if it's, like, a great Christmas, it's grand. It's grand. It's a happy, fun time, but it's just, like, chilling with your family. It's not something you're going to, like, tell stories about. Everyone always asks you when you go back to work, how was your Christmas? And it was like, it was Christmas. Like, I ate turkey. I got presents. I gave presents. And it was fine. And if it wasn't, then it was generally, like, shit. Like, so, but Wrestle Kingdom is one of those things that if you're a wrestling fan and if you're into it, it's like, oh, no, this is going to pay off. And it pretty much always does, especially since you started these parties. So, what we do every year here on Low Blows, it's become a tradition for the third time running now as well, where we do an explainer show for people who aren't necessarily like me and obsessive about it all, but want to join in on the restivities, as I've started calling them. If you want to join in and you want to get involved and know what's going on, but you haven't been paying attention, that's okay. That's fine. I know a lot of the wider New Japan community, maybe not in Ireland, because we tend to have a fairly, like, inclusive fan base. But I know a lot of the wider community seems like, you know, maybe might seem a bit snobby and alienating. And it's like, right, well, that's for them, but that's not for me. No, like, what I say is, come on down, join us. Like, if you have questions or if you want to know more, you don't have to know everything. Part of the best part of, for me, about being a fan of New Japan and of Wrestle Kingdom and all of that side of things is learning about these things and going back to when you're a kid and you're first learning about wrestling and you're like, why does the referee count when he's outside? And then being told that and being thinking that's the most amazing thing ever. And you get those things regularly when you start to get into New Japan and you kind of, the world unravels and it's such a detailed, complicated world with so much history that there is so much to learn. But also you can appreciate it once you have a little kind of like insight into why is this happening or what's going on. You can appreciate it even if you haven't watched it, and that's what we look to do here. We're not looking to talk over people's heads. We're looking to give a show that you know, is entertaining in its own right. And like, if you're a hardcore New Japan fan, you're gonna enjoy and get something out of, but also as well something for beginners too. Something that makes it nice and easy and simple that you understand kind of the stakes that's going on. So that's what we're gonna do. We also have a special guest lined up. Irish commentary legend Ben Given is gonna join me this year. He's gonna preview. We sat down before Fight Factory episode 12. That took place last Sunday, and we talked through the card match by match because he's a New Japan nerd just like me as well. So it was great to chat to him. We're going to play that match by match preview coming up and kind of give you the stakes and our own thoughts of it and things you can look out for in doing that. But first, we're going to get kicked off with basically just, we do this every year, it's an explainer basically on what you need to know about New Japan and what the big differences are, what some of the history of it is and what the big differences are. Every year I try and kind of change this up. You could just make one generic kind of clips package, but also like it's only a short kind of package as well, so you kind of just want to give the cliff notes. So every year I try and change it up and add a bit more so it's fresh for people who maybe have listened and started to follow along as a result of these. So here we go. First off, what's the big difference between New Japan and WWE and the rest of the wrestling world? Enjoy, guys. Wrestling Christmas is back this January, and it tastes so good Wrestle Kingdom decided to come back for seconds with two Tokyo Dome shows back to back for the first time ever. If you want to join in on the restivities, I'm Rick Nash, and here's your annual explainer for all you need to know about New Japan. What is a New Japan, and where does it fit in pro wrestling canon? Ironically, by its name, New Japan is one of the oldest, most historic big promotions in existence today. Started in 1972 as a breakaway from All Japan Pro Wrestling, led by legendary wrestler Antonio Inoki. Comparable to how the Premier League broke away from the FA or the PDC darts with the BDO, it is now owned by trading card company Bushiroad. New Japan have had working relationships with WWE, hence why you'll see clips of Hulk Hogan and The Undertaker working there, WCW, TNA, and pretty much every big wrestling promotion in the world, and currently work with Ring of Honor, RevPro, and CMLL. New Japan is known for presenting wrestling as a serious sporting endeavor built around athletes competing over championships, but also enjoys and embraces a lot of the pageantry associated with American wrestling, and this combo has led to running two nights in the 50,000 plus seater Tokyo Dome back to back, as well as expanding into America and recently purchasing women's promotion Stardom. Their fighters are featured in mainstream media and they do a lot of storytelling through newspapers and press conferences as well as in the ring. and the January 4th Tokyo Dome show, which marketed itself as Wrestle Kingdom from 2007, has become arguably the second biggest wrestling event on the calendar, behind only WrestleMania. I've only watched WWE and a bit of AEW. What are some of the differences I need to know to understand what's going on? Whereas American wrestling has embraced its role in entertainment, in WWE with outlandish storylines and in AEW with a wink and nod approach to the audience, as stated, NJPW presents wrestling as a legitimate sport. Wrestlers are there to compete almost exclusively for championships. Almost all of the roster has aligned itself, like MMA, with a stable of sorts, such as the Good Guy, Fighting Spirit-based Chaos, the evil Suzuki Gun, who don't play by the rules, the edgy alternative Los Ingobernables de Japón, or the infamous Bullet Club started by our own Finn Balor. History and legacy plays a big part. Before every IWGP heavyweight title match, they air a video reminding you of all past champions. And long-term storytelling is very much alive in NJPW. Tetsuya Naito's arc that he continues to play on until this weekend began nearly 7 years ago, for example. Big matches have attention to detail and reward long-term investment. You'll have spots that are callbacks to matches that happened years ago, and following along on Twitter or with knowledgeable fans is often essential to give you the full scope of what's happening until you learn for yourself. But when you do, it's arguably the most satisfying experience you'll get watching pro wrestling today. Basically, every little tick that fans will complain about in more silly and disposable American product is answered here. Countouts are 20 instead of 10, with a quicker parlance leading to convincing near falls, because who likes a countout finish? Referees have discretion and are the ultimate authority in matches where cheating occurs, so wrestlers can't just get disqualified on purpose and retain their titles. When the action spills to the outside, anything goes, because wrestlers have chosen to leave the safety of the ring. Even tag team rules are looser to enable more free-flowing action and less thinking about the rules. If you ever find yourself frustrated at WWE for a certain anachronism, New Japan almost definitely have accounted for it with their nerdy attention to detail. There's more wrestling than ever. How do I fit New Japan into my schedule when I'm already struggling? Easily. They don't run weekly TV shows for a start. So instead, you're looking at less regular big shows that are all meaningful. After both Wrestle Kingdom Nights and New Year's Dash, which is their Raw after WrestleMania reset show, you've got three new beginning shows at the start of February, the New Japan Cup in March, the Best of Super Juniors tournament in May, Dominion, which is their version of, say, SummerSlam in June, the legendary G1 Climax tournament in July and August that sets up the Wrestle Kingdom main event, three big shows throughout the autumn that fill out the rest of the year, and you're pretty much done. The cards are half-filled with multi-man matches for the live audience or hardcore fans looking for every inch of storyline, but are missable for casual viewers, meaning you can opt out to save time and watch the top half of each card for all the important stuff. All of this can be seen on New Japan World, which is a cheap monthly subscription for what you get. Plus, follow the right websites such as Voices of Wrestling, Twitter accounts like Chris Charlton, and listen to podcasts like Low Blows, and you'll get filled in on what you miss and need to know until you too are an absolute nerd like us. There you have it, guys. I hope that made things a bit clearer for you. So, with that said, now you're a bit like, right, I get the whole New Japan concept. What we're going to do is we're going to play the chat that I had with Ben Given there last Sunday before Fight Factory Episode 12. And we're going to go through each match and the big things you need to know, the kind of historic significance, the storylines, everything else. Give you kind of a brief explainer and a chat about everything and give you our kind of picks as well. Remember that we will also have a new prediction league. So, for example, if you kind of, this happens a lot, like people kind of will log onto our social media and see we're doing a prediction league throughout the year, and it starts basically with Wrestle Kingdom. So if you want to get involved and you want to kind of realize that this was a thing like last June or July and you were like, nah, it's probably too late, get involved from the get-go and we'll help you out with some of our thoughts. Even if you just want to steal our predictions, you can go for it. But we hope to give you enough context that you'll be able to make up your own mind on what you think is going to happen. Because look, wrestling wrestling is still wrestling. Like, it's not a completely... There is a whole history and significance there, as we explained in the package. But wrestling is still wrestling, and the same rules largely apply. So if you get a bit of perspective, you'll probably be able to make your own mind up. So play that. That is going online tomorrow, Thursday. It's going online on Facebook.com/hashtag Low Blows. We're going to be doing a prediction contest for Wrestle Kingdom. And then we've got one for NXT UK the following week. And then we've got our Royal Rumble and When Worlds Collide prediction contest at the end of the month. The Rumble is always really fun. So it's a great time to get involved. So please do Facebook.com/hashtag Low Blows. But anyway, without further ado, let's break down the card match by match with Ben Given. Guys, as part of the Wrestle Kingdom preview now, we are going to give you what you need to know about all the matches on the card ahead of this Sunday. Joining me now, and we're doing this, by the way, if you hear noise in the background or if any wrestlers come over and interrupt because they see us with microphones or anything, which is just, he's already here. He's literally already here. He's staring right here. Justy is liable to break in at any second. We're recording this before Fight Factory episode 12, and joining me is Irish commentator of the people. The people's commentator, I think.
Yeah.
Ben Given, thanks for joining us to preview Wrestle Kingdom.
No problem at all. I'm super excited for Wrestle Kingdom. It's in 1 week.
It's going to be close.
It's my favorite night. Well, now two nights
yes.
of the year for wrestling.
It's going to be, well, morning. Like, it's going to be in the morning.
It's going to be an afternoon. I'm probably going to, like, double bill them. Like, avoid social media and double bill nights one and two on, like, the Sunday afternoon.
Yes.
It's going to be crazy. It's going to be, like, 8 hours.
Oh, it's properly going to be a binge. I cannot wait. Well, let's get into the matches, and we'll kind of give you what you need to know, and also our predictions. If you want to enter the prediction contest and you don't know what's going on, feel free to just steal ours or work off ours. We don't mind. That's fair enough. We'll start talking about a match that isn't actually airing on the show, only released by New Japan recently there on Twitter, due to access and TV rights and whatnot. But a historic match nonetheless that deserves to be mentioned. Stardom having their first ever women's match on Wrestle Kingdom, obviously a contentious issue for years, so this is big news. In it, it's going to be World of Stardom champion Mei Iwatana and Wonder of Stardom Arisa Hashiki against rivals Julia and Hana Kimura. Ben, just like, without getting too bogged down into it, because again, it's not going to air, the significance of this match, it's huge.
This is huge. It's probably going to be put up on Stardom World, but it's not going to be airing as part of the actual broadcast. But this is the first like Joshi match in Tokyo Dome. It's the first Stardom match in the Tokyo Dome, and probably the first Joshi match since like 1994, like the Big Egg. And this is huge. You've got the face of Stardom and faction leader, like she's essentially the Intercontinental Champion, Arisa Hoshiki, versus Hana Kimura, who's like their big future star, leader of the Tokyo Cyber Squad faction, and Julia, who is a big, big get from Ice Ribbon, who's just debuting, and they've got like big marketing plans for her. So it's just like four of the biggest names they're planning to go through with. Just, this is a big building block for Stardom ever since they've been acquired by Bushiroad, and they're like going to be on the ups from here, and you can see that in a lot of the publications. And I hope it's on Stardom World because it looks like an awesome match.
Yeah. I'd love as well, though, like, I have to say, one thing that I really hope for from this whole, like, kind of amalgamation is that it's going to be on. Klong is staring us down right now. He is staring.
He's deadly.
Looking at the notes that we have for this. Yes, we have notes for this. Yeah. We're doing a podcast. Go on, Klong wants to say something.
Klong wants to say something about Wrestle Kingdom 14.
Oh, really looking forward to watching Will Ospreay and that other guy, Takahashi, I think.
There you go. That's Klong's Wrestle Kingdom preview. They come over when they see the mics, but then they hear, like, here, do you want to talk about Japanese wrestling? And they get the fuck away.
They leave,
It's the best way. It's the best way. Japanese wrestling? No, I'm good.
I'm good.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't open that can of worms.
It's going to be huge. I want to see Stardom on New Japan World, though. That's where I want to go. Because, like, it would be great, like, and it'd be great exposure as well. It makes sense. I know they have their own VOD, and why not continue to run it? But I think it'd be in both companies' best interest. So that's where I'd like
to go. I think their current direction seems to be the best of both worlds, because the biggest problem with the biggest argument that was always thrown up about Joshi in New Japan is there's no room for a new division, because they're already stacked with the, you know, juniors and the junior tag, and there's no room in their touring schedule. But keeping Stardom as its own promotion, as its own brand, but publicizing it to the same level as New yeah. Japan and sometimes sharing supercards together
yeah.
is probably the perfect balance of how to get that over
exactly
with
like
new Japanese audiences.
You have like a G1 Climax, say, final or a big, like, say a G1 Climax final is a perfect example because it's like, it's the end of a tour, wrestlers are banged up, there's only one match that really has significance. Of course, they're also building other matches as the card goes on, but right there, that's when a starter match will come in perfectly because it's like, yeah, like that's their platform to shine. Big show, but it's all based around one match, so there you go, that's where you want it. And this is a start, like.
Yeah, this is definitely a huge, huge thing. Dark Match will eventually be up on Stardom World, which is also a great streaming service.
Yeah.
I highly recommend it. It's got some great stuff on there.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll air, because it sounds like a great match, but so far it's Dark. But it will be in the Tokyo Dome.
We'll see. There's a lot of demand around it anyway, so I don't know. They own the same company. They're run by the same company, so hopefully there could be stuff done in between now and then based off the fan reaction, because there is a lot of outcry for it. We'll get on to the matches that we will be able to watch, though. Starting off with the IWGP Heavyweight Championship match, the team of Gorillas of Destiny against Finn Juice, the team of David Finlay, Juice Robinson, winning, of course, the World Tag League, and kind of just an upset team, which I think... They badly need a shot in the arm. The heavyweight tag division is the one kind of slide about New Japan that you have, where they don't. They're tag team wrestler bookers, but they don't have a strong tag division. You can get your notes. Just
oh, that's fine. I'm good without the notes. We'll go off book. Justy destroyed my notes as we were talking.
But yeah, so it's the one thing that kind of needs work. He's literally burning the notes.
He is setting Justy the notes on fire
burning
as we speak.
Notes. He worked for hours on them.
Those are some flammable notes.
Hours of Ben's life literally quick. Being burned away by Justy.
So yeah, the IWGP heavyweight tag match.
Well, this is like for me, Finn Juice have to win this because there needs to be a shot in the arm. There needs to be something new. When Evilus and Ada were in the finals of this, I was like, oh my God, I can't watch this match again. Nothing yeah. against any of the participants. It's just
You've got two amazing tag teams in that division,
yeah.
but it was two teams.
Yeah.
It was Evil and Sonata and obviously Gorillas of Destiny, and it's basically been their division
yeah.
since like 2014.
Yeah.
With like the occasional Killer Elite squad break in, but they're gone now
yeah.
as a team. So Finn Juice is a great addition to this, though my prediction is that Gorillas of Destiny are going to retain,
okay.
but Finn Juice are going to have a really good showing.
Yeah.
They're going to have a really good underdog babyface performance. They're going to come up short because Juice's night is for night two.
Of course, and we will yeah. get to that. Okay, so let's talk about, because there's not only one title situation or title tournament, so to speak, hanging over the two nights. Of course, the IWGP heavyweight title, we're going to talk about that in a bit, but let's talk about the IWGP US Championship and the situation there. First off, night one, you've got US Champion and also someone who was really happy to win AEW Japan are in the breakout of the year. Lance Archer, he campaigned for this award.
I cannot believe like the last year Lance Archer has had, because
yeah.
I thought it was a joke that he was in the G1.
Yeah.
He was 43 years old, always middle of the road, tag team specialist, nothing special, and then suddenly has one of the greatest G1 breakouts
yes.
I've ever seen. At 43 years of age, he's like, he became a Bruiser Brody-esque brawler
yeah.
like overnight, had some amazing matches. Check out Will Ospreay on like the first night of the G1. Blew me away because I went in expecting nothing from him. I was expecting Ospreay will be good,
yeah.
Archer will drag him down. No,
yeah.
he stepped up his game and, of course, got a really lucky break as well because of the flight situation. New Japan doesn't mess around. John Moxley got stripped of his title and Lance Archer came in and just became US champion.
Amazing.
Huge, huge win for him.
Amazing. Amazing.
And it's been an amazing year.
But also as well, you have like, he's facing John Moxley. Texas Deathmatch. We have a clarification on the rules of this. It's not the Shiv version where you have to, like the old WWE Randy Savage last man
yeah.
standing match where you have to pin them and then wait for a takedown.
Yeah, this isn't going to be Randy Savage versus Crush.
It's not that. It's not that, guys. We're okay.
Yeah.
So basically, it's you either get a 10 count or a submission as well. So you knock them out or submission, but there's no pinfalls in this match, is the way it's going. John Moxley, and the winner, of course, faces Juice Robinson on the Sunday as well. So who do we see, kind of, how do we see this panning out?
This one is probably one of the more difficult ones, yeah, because I fully see Juice winning on night two.
Okay.
But that would mean, with my current predictions, I'm predicting John Moxley having a one-day reign.
Right.
Basically, I think John Moxley's going to win this. It's a Texas Death Match.
Yeah.
He's a massive, like, global star. Mm. He's going to have, like, a 10-count victory over Lance Archer. It's going to be, like, a 0.1 on the Muda scale, probably, with these two. But I think Moxley's going to win. He's going to face Juice, and Juice is going to get his win back in night two.
Okay, interesting. Well, like, see, you have this as well, though, like, because this was all set up. The original Juice and Moxley match was set up by Juice playing spoiler for Moxley in the G1 on the last night, of course, knocking him out of contention. For me, I think, we'll get to this, there seems to be a working relationship now forming between AEW and New Japan. We don't know the depths of it. We don't know what. It's very exciting, and that's the point. Like, it comes down to this weekend, and we'll find out literally in the ring how this is going to play out.
One of the matches, the results of which will tell us whether or not AEW and New Japan have a shoot working agreement.
This is it. So, for me, it looks good, because we wouldn't be here discussing this if something wasn't happening to begin with. So, for me, having Moxley walk out of the whole weekend as champion seems most likely, because it would preserve that. He's obviously a huge star. He brings eyes to New Japan as well when they're talking about this US expansion. So for me, that's the way I think it's going to go. But again, I could totally see Juice. Like, Juice needs a big win on the Wrestle Kingdom stage. He deserves it. We all love him. But again, it's almost like Terry Thatcher here in Ireland when it comes to the stadium. It's like, you know, why would you give away a little win? Why would you have him beat a Haskins when you can have him beat a David Starr?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like, could you keep having him lose, but then, like, all of a sudden he wins a G1, like, in a couple of years or something down the line? You'd say it's crazy now, but you would have said, like, the CJ Parker being a New Japan star and beloved by all across the world would have been crazy a few years ago. His career has defied logic.
Yeah, no one expected him to be one of the best promos in the game, one of the best storytellers in the game, and he went through with it. And after the departure of Kenny, obviously, like, Juice is built up as the face of the U.S. title division and the U.S. expansion. So I think it's going to be a big, big win for him on night two against Moxley.
Okay, okay, that's fair enough. Right, so we have a few more to get to. I'm going to leave a few of the bigger ones until the end. So we'll get to some of the smaller but no less significant matches. Let's talk about Juice and Thunder Liger's last couple of matches. Of course, it finishes with Sato Naoki. Naoki Sano, sorry, he teams with him on night two to face the team of Ryu Lee and Hiromu Takahashi. Obviously, Takahashi by then could be junior heavyweight champion. We'll discuss that
We'll get to that, yeah.
But Juice and Thunder Liger, for me personally, I thought, like, I would have liked to see the Suzuki feud be the end of this. I would have liked to see the way that ended. When that finished, I was like, there's his retirement. That's perfect. Yeah. And I couldn't help but be disappointed by this match, because it's not one-on-one, because it's not built up. It's just kind of thrown together. Again, like, Keen and Katie on the show were saying, maybe this is the match you wanted. Okay,
I think it's more of a traditional Japanese retirement in this case, where it was more of a retirement tour. So the Suzuki feud, it brought up a lot of his old past stuff. Yeah. It brought up Kishin Liger, their last match. He went in as Battle Liger, and they had that big bloody feud. His last ever singles match was against Taka Michinoku, which is very significant to him. And now these last ones are tag matches with, first off, with all of his old rivals and friends and people important in the juniors division. Mm. And then second is his oldest rival teaming up with him against two of the future of the junior division to sail away off into the sunset, which I really like. It's got no real story behind it or significance, other than this is just a bit of a celebration of Liger.
Yeah, and this is true. Well, the big question, look, with Hiromu in this, you'd say, right, he's going out on his back. Poor Ryu in this, you look at it and you're like, maybe there's a chance. I lean more that he's going out on his back. Where would you? Or would, is there a chance for Riley Lee, like, that he could be in there for the purpose of, look, he's a guy who can come back on New Year's Dash and do something cool and we'll forget that he got pinned by Liger. It's still an amazing honour to be pinned by Liger. Which way do you see this going?
Yeah, I think in this case, Liger's been a very generous, like, worker. He's been really big on putting over younger stars in his last ever Best of the Super Juniors. He went without a single win. Yeah. It's not going to be like Riki Chosu situation where he just flatlines like Okada in his retirement in like 2012. I think in this case, Liger's going to go out on his back and, you know, give a respectful bow to the future of the juniors division because the Tokyo Dome's really important, especially with Liger. He wrestled on the first ever Tokyo Dome wrestling card. He was the first match on the first ever like New Japan like Tokyo Dome January 4th show in a big tag match. So this is like super big for New Japan. He's been there from day one. He's like the Mr. WrestleMania. He is the Undertaker of New Japan for his longevity. And they're just giving him a simple, clean, he's going to lose to a new guy. Yeah. Pass the torch, move on.
Will you cry?
Oh, I'll definitely cry. Yeah. Liger's what got me into Japanese wrestling in the first place.
He's like, and he seems like such a decent, nice guy who's just done everything right. There's no controversy around this. There's nothing but a celebration towards all of this retirement tour because he's just, everyone loves Liger. Like, that's it. I've never seen even a pissy tweet about Liger. And I've seen pissy tweets about you.
Yeah. I've seen plenty. Like, my cover photo on Twitter is Ben Given Company Killer. But Liger, there's never been a single bad word of him said, and he's been wrestling since 1983. Mm. So, like, if you can go 37 years in the business and nobody has a bad thing to say about you, that's, like, a generous legend right there.
Yeah, that's the legacy I think he'll leave in the industry. Let's talk about some of the undercard as well as the Liger retirement on January 5th. Of course, you have the Junior Heavyweight Tag Team titles on the line. Taiji Ishimori and El Fantasmo against Roppongi 3K. Roppongi 3K coming into this with kind of a new attitude, you know, a bit more. They're growing into it. They're not the kind of little, come on, baby faces anymore. They're coming in, but also establishing themselves as you know, individual singles competitors and the Best of Super Juniors. Every year they're kind of taking a step up. So this could go either way. Like, I could easily see Roppongi 3K win in the same way we used to see the Young Bucks lose to someone to start off the Wrestle Kingdom of years past. Roppongi 3K winning could be a new tradition that we see for years now. Again, you got to keep in mind that New Japan are very slow moving with booking and so on. They don't tend to break up teams until it's well boiled to the brim. But I could also see Roppongi 3K just totally like coming apart, and I could see that outcome as well. Which way do you see this junior heavyweight title?
Like, I would say the more interesting outcome is Sho and Yo coming apart. Because Yo is always, they've had this dynamic for a while of Yo being the much more heelish of the two. But I think currently the junior tag division in New Japan has been in a bit of a holding pattern for the last like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
It's been a very clear, babyfaces win at Wrestle Kingdom, lose again at Dominion, win the Super Junior Tag League, win at Wrestle Kingdom again.
Yep.
And I think that's probably what they're going to keep following for the time being. It's going to be a really great match, but as far as booking goes, the junior tag division is kind of an afterthought.
Yeah, and when you consider the heavyweight
wow cycle.
Exactly, when you consider the heavyweight tag team division is lacking, that's the one they put effort into. Yeah. You know what I mean? The junior tag division is like, do some flips, lads.
The junior tag division at this point kind of only exists because Gato, the booker, was a junior tag legend, and he's not trying to drop the division that he was a big deal for.
Yeah, exactly, and that's it. And it's a shame, though, because there's potential there. It's a cool division. It's like, you see, you know, the heavyweights is the hoss fights, and then the juniors is the athleticism, but they just tend to, again, like you say, a holding pattern, and it is frustrating to see because we like all of these people individually. We want there to be more, but unfortunately, it is what it is. Roppongi as well, I'd say, would be the safe bet. But if you're looking for something interesting, Ishimori and Fantasmo would be, if you want to spice up your predictions for this. Rev Pro Championship on the line, British Heavyweight title, Zack Sabre Jr. defends against Sanada. Is there still talk about Sonata going to WWE? Do you remember that bit was a thing for a while?
Sonata is a big WWE fan. I always forget that he main evented Bound for Glory in TNA.
Yeah.
I always forget about that in like 2014.
Yeah, long reign and X Division champion.
He's right? Always wanted to be a US wrestler for a long time, but I think he's like more committed to New Japan because they've been giving him more solid of a push. They've always been sort of like not cutting the legs off of him, but keeping him firmly upper mid card as opposed to main event.
Yeah.
But he's had a ton of matches against Okada in the last year. Some people kind of got sick of them. I really enjoyed all of them.
Oh, the G1 match was fantastic.
The G1 match especially.
Oh my God.
Perfect, yeah. But I think they're going more whole hog on him. And this is actually the first match here that we've covered with an LIJ member in a title match, which leads into my sweeping prediction.
Okay.
It's a very bold one, and it might be a little diluted because for the last 5 years now, I've been saying it's Naito's year. But I think because of the current position where every member of LIJ is in a title match, and for everyone, they kind of seem to be the big baby face going in and the big favorite going in, especially Naito. This is his third try at this, and that's usually how it goes. Third try always does it. That's how it worked for Tanahashi. Yeah. That's how it worked for Okada. I think the closing image of Night 2 of Wrestle Kingdom is going to be the LIJ roll call with all of them as champions.
Ooh.
I think that's kind of the big moment they're going for. Naito's going to have his big moment, and all the other members are going to have their belts as well, except for Daryl. But they're going to do their roll call as champions, and that'll be the big historic moment for Wrestle Kingdom 14.
Oh, and then, but also as well, you've got one member there, Evil, who doesn't have a belt, and you also have motivation then going into New Year's Dash for something special to happen, because there has been talk about Evil and Sonata, you know, there's tension there.
They had their thing
G1 match as well, so that's an interesting one. I do like it, but again, you have to kind of, with these things, sometimes you have to look into the politics of it too, and you have to look into, is Sonata going to be able to make the towns in the UK? Is he going to sell? Are you going to sell a Red Pro card with Sonata necessarily at the top of it, or would you have to kind of compensate for that? Because again, he's got to go back and then be the Red Pro champion after this if he wins. I like that prediction. I kind of want it to happen. But I'm going for Zack Sabre Jr. here just because, again, I'm just thinking of the politics of it all.
Yeah, he is a very safe bet. The Rev Pro British Heavyweight title has, like, one of the most interesting lineages, all because of the New Japan connection. Because, of course, it's the British Heavyweight title. Half the champions are from Japan. Just because Zack Sabre Jr. would come over and feud with everyone. Tanahashi, Suzuki, they're all there.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all former British heavyweight champions.
This is it, exactly. Yeah. And very few Brits as well, so that's it. It's crazy.
I think it's like a 50-50 split, like right down the middle of Brits and Japanese people
of course.
The British heavyweight champion.
It is. It's very random. Yeah. Let's talk about the never open weight situation. There was a time where this looked like it was going to be my main event. When, of course, we had that whole tease, it was probably my favorite wrestling moment of the year. Probably the one moment in wrestling more than any that had me jumping up and down when Shibata got physical with Kenta after, of course, he turned on him and joined Bullet Club. And then later, obviously, beat Ishii for the Never Openweight Championship. It looked like, when we saw him getting physical again, it looked like this is happening. This is happening.
But I think this is probably the next best bet outside of Shibata. This is probably my most excited for a match. I think this is going to be the sleeper hit because
Hiroki Goto, by the way, is facing Kenta.
Yes, Hiroki Goto. Every time he's had a singles match at Wrestle Kingdom, it has been my favorite match on the card.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the best big match storytellers, and this match is probably one of the biggest stories going into it. And it's kind of like a three-act thing of like his last matches, because he had his first big singles match against Shibata. They're actual childhood friends, those two, and they were tag partners. They had a super physical match in the months that would end up being Shibata's swan song of a career, inadvertently, and then a year later, he would have that brutal match against Minoru Suzuki, overcoming his I'm a loser who always chokes syndrome. And now, it kind of comes full circle with Kenta coming around, stabbing his best friend in the back, taking a title off his other best friend, Ishii, and now Goto is like being that no longer the lonely samurai character. he's actually just standing up for his buddies. And I fucking love that story.
Here's the thing, and you're after getting me back into Goto. Here's my problem with Goto. Here's the issue I have, and it's nothing to do with him as itself, because there's a world where Goto is Okada. You know what
there
I mean?
Is, yeah.
In like, if you kind of look through the Hirooki Goto lens, it's an amazing story. He does have an amazing story, and he knows how to carry that, and his matches follow the same kind of pattern and path in the same way that you look at a Tetsuya Naito, who's completely driven by being snubbed a few years ago in the Wrestle Kingdom pool, and like every move he makes, every kind of gesture he makes is kind of drawn from that like one bit of character motivation. Goto is very similar, like you say, you pointed out, you know, couldn't win the big one choker, all this and that and the other. That's his drive. But the problem is that because they've kind of done it so much that I now struggle to actually believe or invest. It's kind of worked a bit too well.
They overdid it a little.
Yeah.
He came this close to becoming Dolph Ziggler for a point.
I think
the last year was not good for him, but I think this story is going to be like the shot in the arm his character needs again, because it's not based around you're a choke artist anymore.
Yeah,
he's finally
true.
In a story that's like more character driven than that and moving past the whole can he do it?
Yeah,
because in this case it's a case of he probably can.
Yeah, he can.
Like this isn't a Goto's might screw up again. Oh
yeah.
No, he's the underdog. It's a Kenta messed with his friends and Goto's gonna kill him.
yeah, true. And like it's and look, like it's G1 as well. Like I think we put him in the Dolph Ziggler zone where it's like, yeah, whatever, Goto's there too. And like again, but like he just refused to be ignored and had some of the best matches in G1 last year. So yeah, okay, look, and as well, like Shibata will still be there, will possibly get physical anyway, because we know like whether doctors have given the orders, he will bump.
He will. We
don't know the situation, but we've seen him bump. He will do it. He could do it again. So people are going to care about this match when you have Shibata there, no matter what, even when he was in Tanahashi's corner last year.
Oh,
and so on.
Beautiful.
Yeah, like when you have him there, he just, you buy in because we all want Shibata to still be a thing. So yeah, people will be into this match. Is it gonna pay off? Is it gonna do the legacy of what, say, we could have gotten? Are people gonna be able to get over the fact that they'll look at this and see that it's not Kenta Shibata, the match they really wanted? And also, do you think Goto's actually gonna do it? Do you think we're gonna get that moment with Goto and Shibata effectively? And keep in mind as well, if Shibata had like a relationship with any championship in New Japan, it's never open weight championship. That was his belt for a long time. So, okay, he could be symbolically celebrate the championship. Do you think that's where it's going to go, and do you think they're going to be able to get over the hump of not being Kenta Shibata? Yeah.
I think this could go either way, but I think this Wrestle Kingdom is going to be very feel-good.
Yeah.
So I feel like they can't pass up the opportunity of having Goto and Shibata in the ring together celebrating the never openweight title after getting revenge on Kenta. Mm. I think it's going to be a big losing night for Bullet Club overall.
Yeah.
They kind of do not do well in Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
And this is going to just be another case of it. Kenta's been an amazing heel, but I think he's just going to drop it here. He's probably going to get it back really quickly, but I think we're going to see a title switch.
Yeah, okay. I can totally see Goto and Shibata celebrate with an ever overweight champ. Yeah, I can see it. I might cry. Let's talk about, before we get to the tournament, let's talk about the match with possibly the biggest stakes here. Tanahashi against Chris Jericho. What could have been just another Chris Jericho match, New Japan match, which has kind of grown a bit stale now, especially after him and Okada kind of stunk it up at Dominion.
It was a very big letdown considering who was in that match.
Yeah, and what it could have been, again, the politics in it, you could see them at play where it's like Okada had to get a roll-up win, but it's the main event of like the second biggest show of the year. It was disappointing. So we'd kind of grown a bit weary of Jericho and New Japan. We're very aware that given, like, you know, if Jericho could have made a list of who he wanted to work with, we're like, the last person in that list is Tanahashi, and okay, now he's getting to do it. But it, like, for me, when this feud started at Dominion after that Okada match, when that feud started, I'm like, all right, this feels like it's more for Jericho than for us.
Yeah.
But they have given this a massive shot in the arm, because we've alluded to it, but just to explain, if you haven't seen it on New Japan social media, if you haven't seen it on our social media, during the week, Tanahashi announced that if he wins this match, he may just challenge for the AEW Championship, and Jericho has subsequently put out a promo saying that he accepts, and that's the way it'll go. If Tanahashi wins, he does get a shot at the AEW Championship, which begs the question, are AEW and New Japan finally working together? They should work together. We know Jericho and Moxie, two of the biggest new, they're probably the guys who'll be fighting for the AEW Championship next, both working these shows. You know, there's a relationship there. Kenny Omega on his last night dropped the IWGP Heavyweight Championship to them. Cody Rhodes obviously dropped, was the former US champion. The Young Bucks have years of history in New Japan. The contact is there. There was obviously stuff that went on in the middle. Kenny Omega has tweeted about New Japan and vented his frustrations at them not renewing his visa and thus not allowing him to work. But do you think this is, there's two ways this could be. If Jericho wins, this is a fun bit of promo. They got permission off Tony Khan. Do you mind if we just mention the fact that and Tony Khan said, yeah, grand, mention that he's champion. You can tease that. That's fine. And it's just something to spice up the match. But if Tanahashi wins, it means they're working together. And we won't know this until the pinfall hits, which is great. I love this. And I love this for one reason, okay? With Wrestle Kingdom in the past few years, we've become like familiar with news breaking just as the show aired that's bad for New Japan. Nakamura, Styles, and the Bullet Club are all leaving. Yeah. Breaking on the eve of it. Last year.
The Elite.
The Elite.
All leaving.
Yes. Yeah. Whereas now it's like, oh shit, if the right result happens, we're all going to gain from it. Do you think this is fun promo, or do you think there's more to this?
See, this is a really difficult one to answer because I can't possibly begin to know what the business workings are. I'm very excited for the match. Initially, it was just another one of Jericho's like bucket list of working the absolute pillars of New Japan. You had, you know, Omega, Okada, Naito, Tanahashi, and of course, Evil.
So random in hindsight. If this is his last match, that is such a random list.
Yeah.
Such a
he
random
has big
list.
Faith in Evil. You know? But with this actual stipulation, it's big, big stakes because it's actual like company relationships on the line. Of course, everyone's been talking about the relationship with Ring of Honor and kind of how New Japan's been pulling away as Ring of Honor has been struggling more and more. Yeah. And in Japan, especially, like corporate like partnerships are very like sacred. They're very important and they don't break easily.
Yep.
But I think in this case, they may just be having a, maybe not a breakaway from Ring of Honor, but a little like side chick
go,
in the form of
go
AEW
long
right
Ring
now.
Of Honor go long.
I think they're seeing the potential of someone else. It's the like jealous girlfriend meme of Ring of Honor and New Japan looking at them. And I think potentially we're going to see a Tanahashi win. Jericho has not had the best track record with wrestling these guys. He tends to like go out on his back against them. With the occasion of, like, he beat Evil, he beat Naito once, but then even then Naito got the win back. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to see Tanahashi win, and we're going to see some level, like, it might not be a full working agreement, but I think it's going to be, like, a bridge has been, like, laid out, and they're in cahoots. They're communicating at this point.
Yeah, here's the thing, okay? I think you're right. I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Looking at it, obviously there has been contact. They wouldn't be allowed, say, AEW. And like when you consider AEW pulling John Moxley from shows and whatnot, we're just being greeted by the Wrestler of the Year, Alexander Dean there.
Irish Wrestler of the Year, passing by.
when you consider that in the past, like there would have had to be contact made. But for me, again, it's not like, okay, Okada's not going to be on Dynamite the week after. You know what I mean? It's not going to show up and there's a full-blown, like, a New Japan invasion.
Yeah.
I think you're right in what you say. It's baby steps. It's bridge building. I think it's a case of, like, there's been damage done to the relationships between the Elite and New Japan, but what repairs damage quicker than anything in wrestling, and that's when business starts to take a lull. AEW has been getting a lot of grief lately. They've started to prove fallible, where they had all this enormous good goodwill when they were coming out. The past few weeks, them losing the NXT, the Dark Order stuff, the stuff where the booking decisions that are just not hitting home, the Bunny and the Blade and all that kind of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, they've had a few like booking missteps, and yeah. generally, like, I don't think many of their booking missteps have been like disastrous,
no,
but they're general growing pain stuff. But as a new big company, they're like under a microscope,
yeah.
and like the honeymoon period has worn off, and yeah. people are starting to be like, well, here's some problems that yeah. they have, here's some issues that they have, and all credit to AEW, they've been listening to that,
yeah.
which is fantastic for yeah. them going forward.
I agree.
So now they're kind of just settling into being an actual staple, as opposed to the hot new toy,
yeah.
they are a, like, permanent presence.
Exactly.
So it's like kind of like the welcoming committee into being a wrestling company.
Yeah, this is
when
true.
You start getting grief on Twitter.
This is it. This is true. And I think that may have kind of necessitated conversations where you have, say, Tony Khan and these lads in the room, and he's like, lads, would you just cop on? Because this is something that will really help us. And can we just kind of bridge it a little bit? And again, I think the way it'll go, I think Tanahashi's winning here. I don't think this is all just a big bait and switch. That'd be really cheap if it was. And Jericho just gets on the mic after, he's like, that's me, thanks for everything, New Japan, it's been lovely, see you after.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what it's built up to, because that'd be really shit, and they know that. So I think this is I think there's something here. I think Tanahashi's going out. I think he's winning this. I think you might see the AEW championship maybe defended at Dominion, for example, though, rather than Tanahashi bridging the gap. And then slowly but surely, and again, it's better for AEW. They've got a weekly TV show to produce. If they just blow their load and have, like, New Japan Invasion on the next episode of Dynamite.
Yeah.
That's it. It's done. Okay, you've the genie's come out of the bottle. There you go.
Yeah.
Whereas I think this is going to be, you know, over the next year, we're going to start seeing more and more integration until we finally have what we want. And that's, you know, AEW lads on TNT, or New Japan lads on TNT, and AEW lads like Omega getting to come back and work in the G1 and the likes of that again. I think we will get to that stage. It's just a case of when, and this is the first step of that, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's talk about it. The main event. You've kind of already tipped your hat here, but we'll talk about the significance and everything else around it. I know I've explained this a while, but we'll go over it one more time. If this is the one Low Blows you listen to every year, basically a four-man tournament for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. Night one, you have the Intercontinental title is on the line. It's going to be Switchblade Jay White against Tetsuya Naito, and it's going to be the IWGP Heavyweight Championship Kota Ibushi defense against Kazuchika Okada. How did we get here? Okay, a few months ago before the G1, of course, Tetsuya Naito, his entire raison d'etre, his entire drive is based around he wants to be the... He wants to win in the main event. He wants to be the ace. A few years ago, he won the G1 as the Stardust character, kind of the typical, come on, babyface.
Tanahashi Jr., essentially.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Won it, and then was against Okada. Got support as the Stardust until he won the G1, and then kind of in a Roman Reigns way, where it's like, we want him until you give it to us, and then we don't want him anymore. Fans were like, he's not there yet. There was a poll held. It was Nakamura against Tanahashi for the Intercontinental title. There was a poll held as for what the main event should be. Okada against Naito or Tanahashi against Nakamura for the secondary belt. And Tanahashi and Nakamura won that poll, which is a big slide against Naito. Naito lost to Okada in Tokyo Dome for the title. Then, in a very, very strange move for New Japan, sent Naito on excursion, which you don't see with people who've won the G1.
Yeah, he was a G1 winner, a junior heavyweight tag winner, a never open weight winner by that point. Like,
just he wants us to
just
say
he was like correction
asked,
that he likes Mexico,
he likes
and that's
Mexico.
Why he went. But yes, he did go on a vague excursion. He was good friends with La Sombra, mm-hmm. who many now know as Andrade Almas mm-hmm. in WWE. Became a member of Los Ingobernables, a unruly group, a faction of an island of misfit toys, essentially, is their kind of deal.
Yeah.
They're all weirdos, and he headed up the Japan division of that with his own group of absolute misfits,
mm-hmm.
who are probably the hottest faction in yep. wrestling over the last 4 years, since, like, early Bullet Club, at least. And his quest from that point on was, I hate the Intercontinental Championship. I want it dead.
Yeah.
So he wins it, and then he smashes it.
Yeah.
He smashes it and smashes it.
Yeah.
Until he eventually loses it again to Hiroshi Tanahashi, who fixes it up, but then loses it again at a later date to Chris Jericho, and wins it back in kind of like last year's Tokyo Dome event, in what was kind of a big character moment for him, because he used the Intercontinental Championship as a weapon to win, and kind of gave it a little nod of respect of, I kind of like you now. Of course, before that, he won another G1, which was when I thought this would be Naito's year.
We all did.
It's him and Okada Part 2, but they told a banger of an unexpected story in that match, or throughout the match. And Naito got caught up in the idea that he finally got this main event against Okada. So he starts doing all of his moves from when he was the Stardust Genius.
Yeah.
And they all get countered because they're shit.
Yeah. Pretty much.
And he has Okada dead to rights in the conclusion of the match, hits his Destino, which is his new move, and that has him beat. But he hears the crowd cheering for him. He gets swept up, and he's like, I'm Tanahashi Jr. again. Yeah. I'm the big happy baby face. Wants to go again, gets countered and loses, leaves the arena crying.
Heartbreaking. I was there for that, and it was absolutely heartbreaking to be there. Just a deathly silence. It's one-of-a-kind reaction where the crowd is just genuinely heartbroken, and he's just relaying our kind of, it's like,
and Okada takes to the mic and instantly like berates him.
Yeah, he's like, fuck it.
He was like, this is your main event. Isn't this all you wanted?
That's it, your career means nothing. And that's been his motivation. So he has been in limbo for a while, and then he got a bright idea. He was holding the Intercontinental title going into the G1. He's like, hey, I know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna win the G1, and then I'm gonna defend both of them, and I'm gonna unify fight him at Wrestle Kingdom next year. I've got it. Perfect. Problem was, didn't win G1. He was fighting, he lost his first few matches, and he was fighting an uphill battle, and then just couldn't pull it back together. Switchblade Jay White beat him on the last night and ruined his plans. Then Switchblade Jay White beat him for the belt, ruined his plans. Then Switchblade Jay White says, you remember that dream you had? I'm going to do that now. That's my dream now. And just said, basically, your plans sound really fun. I'm going to do it. Fuck you.
Switchblade has been the best dickhead heel.
Yes.
Of this decade, and he's only been around like full and a main event level for 2 years now.
Yeah.
He's already been perfect, and one of my favorite elements of his character. Oh, hello, LJ.
LJ Cleary
here. One of the best elements of his character is that he claims he's not a liar, and he's not. Every time he claims he'll do something, he ends up doing it. He says, I'll beat Naito to win B Block, and he does it. I'll beat him to win the title, and he does it. He forgets to mention that he'll win the G1, and he doesn't win the G1.
Yeah.
He loses in the finals.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So he has claimed that he's not going to be a liar, and he's going to win the double gold dash, but I think this is Naito's chance to prove him a liar.
And in the other corner, you have a match that we just really fucking want to see. Ibushi against Okada. Both went to the last night at A Block, faced each other. Okada was leading on points. All he had to do was play defense. And that's what made this a great match. And also makes this a fresh match, because they told a different story to what this match were going to be, and didn't give away what we're going to see in the main event. Okada plays defense. All he has to do is draw the match. All he has to do is make it last 30 minutes. Ibushi has to win. Okada just gets a bit, and any football fan fans know what it's like. When you're playing for a draw, you always fucking lose, because the aim of the game is scoring goals. And if the other person's trying to score and you're not trying to score, they're going to eventually get through. That's exactly what happened. Ibushi caught him, hit him with the Kamigoye, absolutely destroyed him, won the A block, went out, defied the odds. Bullet Club tried every trick they had to get Switchblade to W. Kota Ibushi won the G1, and that brought us here. So it was Okada against Ibushi, the match. We're going to see Ibushi finally getting this push, like having for years kind of, you know, he's done everything there is to do in New Japan before, but they've never fully committed to him because he's never fully committed to them.
Yeah, and this is the story that I think is really interesting here. I was initially unsure about Ibushi winning the G1 this year, because he had just finally signed a few-year contract. After, you know, 10 years of being a free spirit, he'll come and go as he pleases. He'll do a bit of this, a little bit of that. He's doing it for a research institution because his family's an actual billion-dollar company. It's weird. He's a weird guy. But it was weird for me because he just signed like a multi-year contract and then instantly won the G1. And I thought that's kind of weird for like how Gato usually does storytelling.
Yeah, true.
His usual storytelling technique is based around like long-term failures in an uphill battle. Yeah, you see it with Naito, you saw it with Okada, you saw it with Goto, you saw it with Tanahashi trying to get over Nakamura for years and years. And I think this is the step one in that.
Yeah.
So he wins the G1 after finally committing. And I think these two nights are going to be his big embarrassment moment.
Right.
I think he's going to lose to Okada and he's going to lose to Jay White in night two.
Okay.
As a big double whammy of, I really need to take this seriously.
Yeah.
Like, he's finally decided, oh, New Japan are worth my time as, you know, an employer. And I think this is, he needs to be knocked down a peg, like, ego-wise as a character to get a lot more sympathy as a babyface. Yeah. So I think he's going to lose big time here both nights. And that's going to be part of his struggle to be like, okay, I'm not just going to get by on being the Golden Star.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not just going to get by on being the crazy guy who breaks his neck.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to have to buckle down and be on par with these other four guys from now on.
Yeah.
And they're going to be the four pillars going forward.
That's what I, like, again, I totally agree with that. That's my summation as well. Because a lot of people, Ibushi, the problem with Ibushi and the problem I had with him winning the G1 was there's just not that motivation that's there in the same way that you do definitely have for the other three, for Switchblade, for Naito, for Okada even winning it as champion.
Okada is the standard bearer.
Yeah.
Like, he lives and dies by the IWGP Heavyweight title. Jay White, he's the top heel. He wants to ruin everyone's dreams in what I'm predicting to be a feel-good Wrestle Kingdom, so hopefully he doesn't. And Naito, like, he's had a six-year journey leading to this moment.
Yeah.
And Ibushi's character motivation is just, ah, sure, I'll give it a go.
Exactly. And I think he won, like, the one thing that kind of held me back from truly loving his G1 win, and I did, it was a great match and they told it very well, was just having that motivation there and having that extra little bit of bite, because again, he doesn't have that. So I agree there. I think this is where he gets his motivation from. This is where we redefine Kota Ibushi, and it's not just have Kota Ibushi win because fuck it, isn't he great? And he is great. He has that. But in New Japan, you just need a little bit more. Yeah. That's what New Japan is about. There's a little bit of spice, a little bit of bite, so that's why I do agree with that. And also as well, if Naito is to do this, and I agree that I think he's going to beat Switchblade Jay White. They've done a John Cena on him and stacked all the odds against him.
Yeah.
I think he is going to do this. He's going to have it, but it has to be against Okada. Yeah. It would be such a letdown if it was Naito win. Now again, do you know what? If they did it and it was class, I wouldn't necessarily mind it that much if he beat Ibushi, but because it's like, he did win the main event at Wrestle Kingdom, but Okada could always say, well, you haven't beaten me in Tokyo.
You haven't beaten me, yeah.
So,
and I think a great thing about this is any combination of these guys winning, I wouldn't mind too much because they'll just be great matches with great stories, but I think the peak one has to be Naito and Okada. I think they're building to that because Okada's been a massive prick to Naito in the build for this. One of my favorite promo moments was around Power Struggle when Naito eventually wormed his way back into being like, hey, I can be part of this double gold dash even though I'm the only one going in without a title or a briefcase. And Okada said, why don't we put it up to a fan vote?
Oh.
And everyone booed Okada because that's got so much bite to it.
Yeah. But also as well, isn't that such a great moment for how far Naito has come? Because now it was a fan vote that originally put him out and started him on this track. But now he is the darling of the fans. And Okada says that and everyone's like, fuck you, Okada.
Yeah,
it's a full circle moment.
We'd vote for him.
Yeah, this is it. So we're both going for it. Naito beats Okada to close out Wrestle Kingdom. This is the year.
I've been saying it for a long time now. Gato seems to keep my journal and hate me. But I think this is finally it. Every Wrestle Kingdom story has come in threes so far for the Aces.
True.
It took Tanahashi three times to beat Nakamura. It took Okada three times to beat Tanahashi. This is Naito's third time. I think they're going to have him finally have it.
I was sure of it until I said it out loud. And now I'm like, I've said this before.
I've been saying this since 2013.
Yeah. Well, look,
I've been saying this since he was the Stardust Genius.
We shall see. This Sunday, Ben Given, thank you so much for joining us here on Low Blows. Expert analysis as always. Can't wait for Wrestle Kingdom itself. Thank you so much for joining
no
us.
No problem at all. It's going to be an awesome show. Check it out next week.
All right, guys, we hope that that's given you plenty to chew on and got you as excited as I think it was obvious both of us are for this weekend. Remember, Buskers on the Ball this Sunday, 2 till around 10 p.m. It's going to be a marathon session. So the way I'm thinking is you go pint, water, wings. Pint water wings. Just keep yourself topped up, brace yourself for a long session, and we should all have a great time, and I'll enjoy and remember it as well as we go along. It's going to be an absolute marathon to get 2020 started. I cannot wait this Sunday. Tickets available, eventbrite.ie. Of course, we'll have tickets on the door as we always do. This is always something that people, you know, I get it. You know, it's Christmas. It's an expensive time. Like, thinking about buying tickets to further social events is a lot, but at the same time, like, please do come down. We will have tickets on the door. If you can let us know you're coming as well, we have table seats available, so we will have seating for everyone, but it may be around the bar or whatnot. So if you want to guarantee yourself in comfort, get on that. Table seats will be available, I think, until midnight on Thursday off the top of my head. But guys, we're nearly done here. So just to wrap it up, we're going to do what's become a tradition here on Low Blows, and we've given you kind of the background that you need to know. We've told you the matches and what you need to look out for in them. So now all that's left to do is give our honest trailer for Wrestle Kingdom 14.
Come with me and you'll see a world with no Baron Corbin,
no Dark Order,
and the main stars and the bookers.
It's the start of January, which means one thing. The best show of the wrestling calendar at a time in the wrestling calendar you're most likely to forget when talking about the best show. Wrestle Kingdom 14. Now with added women, so you don't need to feel guilty about enjoying it. You can be that insufferable know-it-all on Twitter talking about how stuff your friends have never heard of has changed the game, while a highlight of their wrestling week is watching Lana and Lashley get married. For the first time ever, taking place over 2 days on Saturday and Sunday. Meaning, if you plan on watching it live in Ireland, you get zero lie-ins. Unless you watch both nights back-to-back in Buskers on the Ball, with Low Blows, of course. History will be made as, for the first time ever, the IWGP Heavyweight and Intercontinental Championship will be unified as Switchblade Jay White, Kota Ibushi, and Kazuchika Okada steal Tetsuya Naito's New Year's plans because they sounded more fun. Chris Jericho and Hiroshi Tanahashi square off in an old man fight sponsored by DDP Yoga. And maybe the AEW Championship, if both sides can just chill a little bit and give us all what we want. Hiromu Takahashi returns to challenge Will Ospreay for the Junior Heavyweight Championship in a match between someone who broke their neck doing crazy shit versus someone we assume has broken their neck doing crazy shit every single match. Speaking of everybody dying, Lance Archer defends the US title against Jon Moxley in a Texas death match.
Seriously, there's a good chance we get to see a samurai sword used in this match. These two are insane. They're insane.
Jushin Thunder Liger's legendary wrestling career comes to an end in a random tag team match where everyone will sit around pretending to know who Naoki Sano is. Plus, the Rev Pro Championship is on the line between Zack Sabre Jr. and Sonata as Ring of Honor watch on and remember how they used to get that spot before they got weird. Wonder what shark-based drinks would taste like as Finjuice challenged G.O.D. for the heavyweight tag team titles. Shibata doesn't come out of retirement as we all pretend. It's pretty much the same when Goto challenges Kenta for the Never Openweight Championship and much more. Wrestle Kingdom 14.
Does Dave Meltzer still like this now they don't pay for his friends' visas? Alright guys, that's that for our Wrestle Kingdom preview show. I hope you've had as much fun as I have. I always love doing this show. It's where I get to geek out. We'll be back to normal next week. Katie and Keane back as normal. We're going to be reviewing Wrestle Kingdom and the wrestling week that was. Of course, there's... WWE are back, AEW and NXT, the Wednesday Night Wars are back. I'm sure there's going to be loads to discuss, and then we'll be building up, we'll be writing them. As soon as Wrestle Kingdom finishes, the most fun thing is we're straight into Royal Rumble and peak season for the wrestling calendar, so I cannot fucking wait, guys. And what a year forward with AEW in the mix as well. So we're going to get back to normal with Low Blows next week. In the meantime, like I said, this Sunday, the first party of 2020, for the third year running, we shut down a Temple Bar pub in Buskers on the Ball, and we play Japanese wrestling. For the first year ever, we're going to be doing it from the afternoon. 2 p.m. it all gets kicked off. Both nights of Wrestle Kingdom, back to back. We're going to have no Temple Bar prices on booze, so don't worry. It's not going to make a hole in your wallet at an expensive time of year. We're going to have drink offers. We're going to have food that's going to be available pretty much all night as well. And we're going to have more wrestling. Like, just great wrestling. And as well, like, it's one of those things where, you know, it's Wrestling Christmas. You don't want to spend it on your own. Spend it with your friends. That's what Christmas is for. Spend it with people who are like you, people who like the same things as you. Even if you've never come to any nights, even if you're heading down your own, come out, hang out with me. Ask me if you have any questions you don't understand. I will literally be there, and I'll be able to answer your questions about what's going on the screen and helping you enjoy it. So, guys, you don't have to sit in on Twitter. You don't have to miss out and wonder what everyone's talking about. You can be a part of the conversation, but also have a great fucking night as a part of it. This Sunday, Buskers on the Ball, Wrestle Kingdom 14. It is going to be absolutely ace. I cannot wait, guys. Hope to see you all there. In the meantime, back next week. Well, actually, we'll be back this week with a special Last Low Blows on this Friday. So we are continuing to have your back even during this Christmas period. But we'll be back to normal with the main Low Blow show next week with Keenan Katie. So stay tuned for that. We cannot wait. Until then, guys, I've been Rick Nash. I'll see you this Sunday for Wrestle Kingdom, and that's the bottom line, because Low Blow said so.